Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Nick Augustine here with Attorney Jacqueline Stein from Michael V. Fabia & Associates, and this is the Illinois Healthcare Licensing Podcast of the Month. And we are talking today about some recent trends and issues in IDFPR and what is new at the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation. So let's say good morning to Jackie Stein.
Good morning, Nick.
It's nice to have you on the program again. I know we've talked before, so I look forward to a little bit of a refresher and a little talk about some things that are new in the department and what sort of things that people should be on the lookout for if they are a licensed professional covered by what we're talking about today. So let's go ahead and start by telling the listeners a little bit about yourself, your biography, how you came to working with IDFPR issues, and let's get going with that.
Sure. So I worked for the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, and actually Mike Fabia was my boss at the time. My focus there was as a medical prosecutor, and I also worked closely with the Illinois Medical Licensing Board. And I worked at the department for about 5 years and have been working as an attorney representing professionals since then.
Let's explain a little why that's so helpful to have worked in the department and then to be on the defense side, just to point it out there and then continue. Sorry.
So the main reason I think it's important, well, it's more than one reason. Number one is you have a real insight into how the department works, and just having knowledge of, although a lot of the staff changes, you know, certain people are still there, and it's nice and it's very helpful to our clients that we have contacts at the department. And then just being at the department, knowing what their policies are, understanding the importance of, you know, reaching out to the attorney who may be handling a case, and having an understanding of what you can negotiate and can't negotiate. And, of course, obviously having an understanding of the various statutes that regulate the different professions. So, you know, that background at the department is very helpful to us in representing our clients.
Absolutely. I cannot imagine otherwise trying to jump into, I mean, anyone, administrative law is different in every shape, form, and fashion depending on what your situation is and what the scope is. So it's, to me, incredibly helpful for one to have worked for IDFPR at one point to really understand it so well. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
So, anything else about your background or bio you want to share before we talk a little about trends and issues? How did you get into all that?
Well, I went to law school in Chicago at Chicago Kent College of Law, and then I did a master's in health law at Loyola. And from there, I started working as a medical prosecutor for the department. And, you know, I've always been interested in healthcare in general, and I think especially today, the issues, you know, surrounding regulating the various professions, healthcare, and all the other regulated professions are interesting, and it's important to understand the regulations, and it's important to be able to help our clients because there are a lot of sort of nuances to the way the department operates.
It's very interesting, and that background is certainly a good match, and having a passion for the health and medical industry as well. It makes it it makes it very helpful when we know that what we do is really so important and people really rely on it. So let's talk about what IDFPR does, how they regulate professions for someone who might not have, who might be entering into this. I think some people listening could be doctors, nurses, they could be administrators. I mean, IDFPR issues can touch so many different people in the healthcare professions. So let's talk a little bit about what IDFPR does.
So if you're in a profession that requires a license, most likely you're regulated by the Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, and their goal is to keep the public safe, basically. And you know, where we come in and representing clients can be from the standpoint of somebody who is applying to get a professional license and maybe lacking in documentation, whether that's because they, because of their education, maybe they went to school in a foreign country, or maybe they were licensed in another state that doesn't have the same requirements as Illinois. So we help applicants get their documentation ready and, you know, apply for their license in Illinois. Oftentimes an applicant may have other issues, whether it's a DUI or maybe even a discipline in a sister state that might raise a red flag here in Illinois. And then for those that are already licensed in Illinois or maybe in another state, again, that may have a discipline from another state, that state is required and they are required to report to Illinois. So that would prompt, you know, a complaint to the department. And I should probably back up, but where we come in often is with the applicant or with somebody who a complaint has been made to the department. And that usually starts with an investigation, maybe an interview, maybe a request for records or a statement. The case may end up being closed in those initial phases, or it could be, you know, forward to enforcement. Complaints can originate from, depending on the profession, from an individual, maybe a patient, or, you know, maybe somebody in the real estate business who thinks somebody acted in an unethical way. That could be reported through the through an online complaint on the department's website. Medicaid audit, they report to the department. Information on a healthcare professional from the DEA, a malpractice matter involving a physician where a mandatory report is made to the department. You know, there's numerous ways that these cases initiate. And, you know, once they're in the enforcement unit, then they're assigned to an attorney. And again, I can't emphasize enough how important it is to have to be represented by an attorney at the department, especially, you know, somebody who understands how the department works and knows the prosecuting attorneys and has a good relationship with them, which we do. We have a long-standing relationship with most of the attorneys at the department. And from there, once they're assigned, the next step would be you'll be offered an informal conference or the department will file a formal complaint. Even after a formal complaint has been filed, you may still have that opportunity to have an informal conference, which gives you an opportunity to resolve a matter without proceeding to a formal hearing. It saves the client, obviously, time and money. And those conferences can result in some kind of agreement or negotiation with the department. They can result in having the matter closed based on additional information that we provide to the department. If it ends up going to a formal hearing, the you know, this process can go on for even a year before you have the formal hearing. And again, the hope would be that the matter is closed without any formal discipline, The department does have options for individuals who they feel like are sort of in that gray area and they haven't exactly violated a statute, so they could offer them an administrative warning letter. The other disciplines are reprimand, probation, suspension, revocation, and it's really important to understand the implications of all of the different levels of discipline. It's important for the licensed professional to understand how their employer will react to the various disciplines and how it will affect their business. The department also will occasionally use what's called a non-disciplinary order, which may require the individual to take continuing education. It may also include some kind of fine, but it's not reportable. So, you know, that can be a really good outcome. And occasionally some of the professions will do a fine only. And it's important in that case for the professional to understand a fine is considered discipline, even though there are no terms and conditions with that fine other than that you need to pay the fine. So that's in a nutshell sort of how the department works and how a case would be initiated.
That's good information and an excellent summary for especially people who are new to this subject matter. And a few takeaways that I think of nurses frequently when I think about the future of people's careers and how some of these outcomes that may seem less worrisome at point A become somewhat problematic at point B. And I think that I think about nurses because the nursing profession, there's so many levels and jumps in career and options, and we have to always be very forward thinking, especially also when we look at multiple states. Someone may be a licensee in Illinois and not yet even be concerned with other states, but again, you look at what may happen in the future, and we don't want these things to be a problem in the future. And another question I have for the licensees out there, does a licensee always know that there is an investigation that exists, number one, and secondly, must the department, first of all, investigate every complaint, especially when you suggest that some of these can be filed online, such as if you think you have an unethical real estate agent, it seems like angry people could try to get revenge on others by filing complaints.
Right. Well, I'll answer that question first. I mean, the department does need to look into all the complaints that are made. And I think, you know, they are fairly savvy and can figure out complaints that don't, you know, have merit. But they are required to follow up on any complaint that is made. And how extensive their follow-up is probably depends a lot on what exactly the complaint is and the information that the individual complaining has given the department. Once somebody has made a complaint, that's considered an open matter. So, I can get into that now, or we can talk a little bit about how that impacts maybe professionals, especially doctors, who want to practice in more than one state through the Interstate Medical Licensure Compact Act.
Let's cover it there. But it is. Go ahead.
No, I was going to go back to your question about your statement about the nurses. Again, the nurses. So, you know, many nurses now are practicing in a lot of states, and I think, you know, they are sometimes employed by agencies, sometimes are traveling nurses, and so their employer often doesn't understand the implications of, maybe you had a fine in one state and now you're applying in Illinois. Illinois may want to, you know, discipline you again for that previous discipline, and oftentimes that will have a sort of a domino effect. So it's important for the professional to understand and not just rely on their employer saying, get as many licenses as you can in as many states.
Right.
Because if you have, you know, a past issue, maybe some of the states will review it and say, okay, you were already disciplined. But certainly in the state of Illinois, they take a very hard look at it, and they, if they see a sister state discipline, even if other states have, you know, looked at this matter and not disciplined that individual, Illinois oftentimes will follow the original state of discipline, and they'll want to reprimand your license or look into a DUI, or if you had been fined, they'll want to fine you or, you know, again, reprimand you based on that fine.
It's so interesting, the different states and who has what. And it's not only just the states. It's also different when you talk about nurses and traveling nurses. It's different hospital groups and different, you know, large health conglomerates have different criteria that they have in working with you. I mean, there's just so many things that when you start looking at, you know, what's foreseeable, it's pretty vast. So it is very important to take these things seriously, and that's why we are talking about trends and issues and things that come up, because, like, we're going to kick off here with some of these online renewal issues. These may be new to people who have, and things change all the time. Laws are changing, interstate licensing things are changing, the opioid crisis and what we see with these big busts are changing. And again, where so many people can potentially be touched by the regulatory aspect of healthcare practice, it's good to talk about these things. So, Jackie, let's get into some of the things that are happening with IDFPR and regulation that may not be common knowledge to everyone yet, and things that we see maybe coming in the future.
Sure. Well, I'll just, you know, briefly go through some things that we've seen that, you know, are relatively new issues, that, you know, just things that have changed with the times. So, for example, you mentioned, you know, online renewal, but the bigger issue is that the department is trying, like most companies and agencies, to go paperless. And so by going paperless, so individuals need to know, and, you know, I think that the department has done a good job. People generally know they need to renew online. And, you know, so that's something that, you know, if you're out there on your own or new to Illinois, you know, you just need to make sure you understand how the process in Illinois works and understand your obligation to make sure the department has your updated contact information, address, and email address. But the other implication is, so if a complaint, a formal complaint is filed against an individual, or if the department has sent a notice of an informal conference, that very well may be done by email. And as we all know, sometimes we find emails in our spam or in our trash, or sometimes we never find them. So what we've experienced in our practice, you know, a few times in the last couple of years, is where we get a call from someone who, you know, just happens to be checking their spam, or finally gets something in their inbox that is maybe a default order because they haven't shown up after a formal complaint has been filed, and they keep getting these notices. They haven't gotten one. Finally, they get a notice saying you're in default. They knew nothing about it. Perhaps it is, you know, a notice that you're deficient in your continuing education, and again, they are not aware of it because it's gone into their spam folder. So, you know, as a professional, it's, you know, whether you need to be checking all your emails, I think the main thing is that you need to make sure the department has your current contact information. And if you've gotten a request for a statement, or if you've gotten any contact from an investigator, you know, that's sort of a heads up. You need to be making sure and not looking in your mailbox for snail mail, that you're very aware of that. And again, if this happens to occur, you really need an attorney to straighten it out. You need somebody who can file the appropriate motion, who can make a call to the department and say, hey, you know, this individual sent you their continuing education. Yes, it was a little bit late, but here are all the emails showing they sent it. How can we resolve this? Because, you know, if you don't handle it, you may end up with a suspension on your license. And then to go through that process of, you know, petitioning to get your license reinstated is, you know, again, a real burden. So it's just important for professionals to understand what it means that the department is going paperless and that you may not get a hard copy of a notice. You may not get a hard copy of a consent order that you signed in the mail. You'll probably get it in your email.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's just something that we've been seeing. And some other things, if you'd like me to just go through some other issues.
Yeah, just
let's seen.
Yeah, just,
okay.
Just with time, let's just kind of plow through.
Okay, so you brought up, you know, with nurses and healthcare professionals being licensed in many states, and I mentioned the Interstate Medical Licensure Compact Act, which is a way that allows a physician to maybe have a license in a home state, but having that license here allows them to practice in other states. And again, oftentimes employers who need their professional to be licensed in many states might say, you know, go through the Illinois Medical Licensure Compact Act, fill out the qualification application, which you can get online. And so the professional would fill out this application, and what they'd be waiting for is a letter of qualification. The problem is oftentimes you assume you've never heard anything from the department, so you assume when you answer that question, you know, is there an open investigation? You say no, and then you get maybe a letter from the department saying you're not eligible to receive a letter of qualification because you're under an active investigation. Well, you might have no idea about that. So I think that's something that the department realizes could be a problem because, again, somebody makes a complaint online. It might not even be a valid complaint. It may not go anywhere. And yet individuals trying to get this letter of certification or qualification aren't able to get it because of something they didn't know about. And we recently had a matter like that, and it took a while to, number one, figure out what this investigation was, you know, by making contact. We did this by making contact with the department's investigative unit and, you know, calling other contacts at the department to help us move forward with this. And in the end, in this particular case, this investigation was closed after we had our client send a statement and, you know, met with an investigator. But, you know, you can lose a lot of time and, you know, your employer may be concerned that there is something open against you. So that's something that we have seen, and it's something that professionals, physicians especially, going through this Interstate Medical Licensure Compact Act should be aware of, that open investigation can be simply that a complaint's been filed and it's been given to an investigator, whether they've done anything with it, whether it's valid. You know, it doesn't matter. It may prohibit you from getting that letter of qualification that your employer wants you to have so you can practice in other states. So that's one relatively new issue that we've seen. And then, of course, you know, we all have been hearing and reading in the news about the opioid crisis. And again, especially healthcare professionals that are prescribing need to know how to avoid you know, medical board discipline and how to, you know, all the steps to take while they're prescribing. And one of those is the prescription monitoring program, the PMP. So individuals are supposed to, or physicians, people prescribing controlled substances, should log in and see what their patients have been prescribed, where they're, you know, whether they're going to other doctors. And now when physicians use electronic medical records, I believe they're getting that information. But again, it's something that's important. Physicians need to know that's a requirement. The department is really looking into the prescribing by physicians, and they take it very, very seriously. So we encourage our clients to always document, make sure it's clear that when you're prescribing, you know, you have had sent your patient for appropriate tests and that you have tried other options. You know, so there's a number of safeguards that physicians and other healthcare professionals who prescribe can put in place, and it is very important. And the department hears about these matters. You know, they can hear about them through a Medicaid audit being reported, again, a patient complaint, the DEA. If they have red flags, they may report a healthcare professional to the department to look at. So, you know, this is a big issue at the department, and the disciplines where they think there's been inappropriate prescribing is usually pretty severe.
And it's big news.
It is. It's all over in the department. Again, their mission is to protect the public health, and so that's what they're trying to do. And the people who are abusing
the system to try to get their hands on medications and pills, whether they're for their own use or diverting them for sale,
right,
or whatnot, they are getting more and more sophisticated, and you see it on different television programs and, you know,
absolutely,
news reports of these things. And it can be really scary if you're the person who's in charge. And
right,
you,
absolutely.
I mean, looking over your shoulder is, you're looking everywhere. I mean, we see it in popular television programs. We see it in the news, and it's you know, the people who are up to no good don't always look the kid. They don't always look the part. So we just never know.
And
so again,
absolutely,
you can't be too careful.
Right, and that's, you know, one thing that we encourage our clients to. You really need to, you know, you need to be in charge, and you know, some of these patients who do have addiction issues, you know, may be coming in and telling you, hey, I want to be on this medication, I want this. You need to really know, you know, how to avoid ending up prescribing for inappropriate, you know, what the department would call inappropriate purposes. And it's hard because, you know, again, as you said, some of these individuals who do have addiction and mental health issues, you know, they come in complaining about severe pain, and the doctors are trying to help them, and, you know, oftentimes trying to help them gets them in trouble with the department.
Absolutely.
So it's a very complicated issue, and you know, the department and the board are reviewing these records, and the best thing that you can do, again, is to document things in detail so that there's no question about why you prescribed the way you did.
Absolutely.
And make sure all the, you know, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say medical marijuana. Can we touch on that? Because as we're talking about pain issues and everything else and what's prescribed, we also have, you know, now legal medical marijuana in the state of Illinois, and there are issues there with people who have prescriptions and drug screens.
Right, right. And some of those issues are, again, you know, individuals working for, say, we've had this with maybe nurses working for an agency, and they, you know, have a job for them in a certain hospital. They do their pre-employment screening and show positive for marijuana, and they legitimately have a prescription, but their employer reports them to the department. The employer maybe didn't know about it, about the prescription, or maybe the employer, it's something they don't want to deal with. So they, you know, they don't understand all of the implications, and that, you know, you can have a prescription for marijuana and be able to work as a healthcare professional. But we have had cases where an individual was reported to the department and, you know, had to come in for an informal conference, and, you know, of course, this person had a valid prescription and the matter was closed, but it took a lot of time and expense for the individual. So I think, you know, a licensed professional, you know, if they are screened, they really need to maybe even educate their employer and let them know ahead so this doesn't happen. And I think the department is seeing things like this, and they understand it, but they still have to go through their process of having you come in for a conference, or maybe they've even end up filing a complaint. So that's just, you know, something for people to be aware of, especially as, you know, medical marijuana is used more in this state and more people have prescriptions.
It's also interesting that not all states allow that at all. I'm in Texas,
right.
And if that would not go, that would not fly.
Right.
You know, so
absolutely.
We just, you know, different states. I mean, just with the National Practitioner Data Bank, it was one or any of the other many, you know, houses of information. What may be coded in by one state is understood as one thing, one place, and is called something some different somewhere else. And
right.
It almost seems like over paperworking yourself, but we have to be forward thinking, and the more forward thinking
right.
we can be, the better off we're all going to be. We have some time
right.
left to talk a little bit more about some of the trends in discipline and different conditions and probationary orders, what's available there. And then we'll talk about some, if you could, some changes at the department, as we know that we get a new governor and there are different things that may
right.
be coming down
right.
the pike.
Yeah, well, some of the things, you know, as far as the recommended discipline, one thing that we're seeing over the last few years is when there's a matter involving an ethical issue, whether it's a Medicare fraud issue or even a patient boundary issue, maybe even an inappropriate prescribing case where the department has recommended some kind of probation. And one of the terms that they often will put in is for an individual to take an EBOS course. And this is an ethics course. What people don't always realize is that it's an expensive course. I think it's a couple $1,000s. And there are five parts to it. I believe there's five parts to it. And all those parts may not be relative to what your specific issue was or what part of the act you violated, but the department generally requires you to take and pass all five parts of this EBOS course. So it's important for the attorney, and it's important for the client to understand that you say yes to this, you know, that's an additional expense. And sometimes you can go to the department and say, hey, you know, our client has, you know, financial issues. Is there an alternative? So it's important to know that they're not always going to agree to that, but it's always worth asking, again, because that is, you know, it's an expensive course to take, and it's all of the areas of this EBAS course aren't always relevant to the individual's issue. And the other thing, you know, we're noticing fines seem to be higher maybe than they used to be, and the department seems to be using fines more often maybe than we thought before. And again, they don't always agree, but you know, if your client has a financial issue, it's always worth, you know, seeing if you can lower that fine to make it more, you know. The other thing that we are seeing with individuals who are licensed in a lot of other states, if there's any kind of discipline, even if it's just a fine, you know, you might be able to get Illinois to do the exact same discipline, but sometimes Illinois will look at that, whatever act resulted in that fine, and say, hey, in Illinois, this would be a reprimand, so we want to reprimand your license. And then the impact of that. And even if the other states don't take action on Illinois, they might want to look into it. So it might require getting an attorney in all these other states to make sure that the other states don't take action. So, again, it's disciplinary orders, which can be really important and helpful because, again, they're not disciplined. The department may want you to take certain nothing's being reported to the National Practitioner Data Bank. It's not discipline. You know, you don't need to report that your license has been disciplined. It won't have an impact on your licenses in other states. So, I mean, if you end up with a non-disciplinary order that has a lot of restrictions, well, that might be a little bit of a gray area if you're ever asked, do you have any restrictions on your license? But generally, you know, those non-disciplinary orders involve continuing education, maybe a fine. So it's important to understand that is an option that the department has, and if it's offered to you, it's really a good option, especially because it's not going to be reported.
I missed one question. About past criminal convictions. What is there a change now where licenses can be restored?
Yeah, the state of Illinois is really trying to give individuals who have had past criminal convictions the opportunity to apply for a license and be able to get back into the profession that they were trained in. And the information regarding that is on the department's website. And I think, you know, it's really it's a great thing for, you know, people who have made mistakes in the past but really want to be able to contribute again and have, the ability to apply for their license or to petition to reinstate it. And, again, to be able to work at the profession that they were trained to work in. So that's a, something that...
That's a good thing.
Yeah, it is a good thing. And the department will be very careful about screening. And, again, an individual can go online and they can read about the criminal convictions that maybe will be prohibitive as far as getting your license back. But at least it opens a door for people who may have thought, you know, oh, I have this felony conviction, I'll never be able to be a nurse again. So
that might have been the case years ago, you know.
That would have been the case years ago.
Things change.
Absolutely.
You know?
Things change.
So we've got about a minute left, so let's kind of cover anything else that we left off or changes, you know, talking about changes, anything that you think we might be seeing in the future, and then how can people best get in touch?
Well, I think that one of the things, again, we've talked about the opioid crisis, and I think as we see how that plays out, there'll be an impact on how the department deals with those issues. With a new governor, we're sort of waiting to see if, you know, what changes will be made at the department as far as, you know, policies. They are, in certain professions, enforcement short-staffed. Maybe that will change, and in investigations, and maybe, you know, if they find the funding, they'll be able to, have more people handling a lot of these matters. But the past director, Jessica Baer, is no longer at the department, so we're waiting to see, you know, who her permanent replacement will be. That can have an impact on how the department handles different issues. So, and we can be reached by Michael Favia's website and by calling our office at 773-631-4580. We are always happy to consult with individuals that have questions regarding their license or things they could be, you know, concerned about in their future. We're happy to sit down and meet with people.
Absolutely. And take these things head on and take them seriously. They don't go away. It's like, when kids try to, college kids, put the bill in a drawer, that doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
No.
You know?
I think that's really important. You know, be aware of, you know, the issues even, you know, that are in the news, like this opioid crisis.
Yep.
And be aware that, okay, if the department is doing everything paperless now, I have to know that, you know, it's an online renewal. Maybe I have to submit my continuing education that way. If I'm going to be notified about anything from the department, it's most likely going to be email. So I got to make
email,
sure that
check
the department
the email.
Has, yep, and always update. It's the licensed professional's responsibility to update the department with their current contact information.
All right. Good stuff. Good information. Jackie Stein, thank you so much. We're about out of time, but we'll do this again next time there are exciting news. I mean, any hot breaking news, and you know, you'll let us know and we'll talk about it. So
okay,
thank you again. I thank you too. Absolutely. And thank you to all who listen to this program. And as you find this information, please share it with others who might need also to know. This is Nick Augustine with Jackie Stein for Michael V. Fabian Associates and the Illinois Healthcare Consultants Podcast. I thank you all for your time. Have a great day.
Thanks, Nick. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.